Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on Monday, June 6th, 2022. To begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and we do place the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise hand or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you would like to make any comments, you can go under reactions and click on the raise hand icon that will raise and lower your virtual hands. This helps us knowing who would like to make some comments and we can have one speaker at a time. As you know, we do have ASL interpreters with us and to help them doing their job well, if you would, please state your name before you start making your comments. It helps them. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is at that time. So thank you in advance for that. Anybody who would like to make public comments, please either raise hands at the time when we reach public comment section. If you're able to send me chat message, please do so. And I would put your name on the list. As a reminder, everyone knows that we provide 3 minutes for each speaker to begin with. If we have any time remaining, we would definitely come back to any speaker who has any additional comments. Chair Posner, would you like me to go ahead and do the agenda now or later?
I think we can probably start by calling the roll so we know who everybody is and they're here.
Sure.
And then we can approve the minutes and approve the report to the board after we've chatted with Mr. Off and Mr. Blake.
Okay, sounds great. So I would go ahead and take the roll call of the committee members. Please confirm your presence. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Here.
Thank you. Vanessa Cole.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Here.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
Alti.
Marcy Goldstein.
Alti.
Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaphore. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. And Kelly Semino.
I'm here.
Okay, thank you. That concludes the roster for today's AAC meeting. At this point, I would go ahead and read the agenda out loud. All right, so we just finished the roll call of the AAC members. Afterwards, we would have approval of today's meeting agenda, approval of prior meeting minutes, along with the board report. At 5:40, we have the interim general manager, chief executive office, Andrew Off, followed by Metro Access fares, flat fares update and impact of rail shutdowns by Christian Blake. We have a committee discussion about AAC elections at 6:20. At 6:45, we would have public comments. 7 p.m. is the bus and rail subcommittee report, followed by Metro Access subcommittee report at 7:15, and the meeting would adjourn at 7:30 p.m. At this point, Chair Posner, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. And with my prerogative, I'd like to turn the floor over to Mr. Off, who is visiting with us and busy, and ask if he would like to talk to us for a little bit. before we talk to him?
No, absolutely. Can you still hear me okay, Phil?
Perfectly.
Okay, great, great. Well, no, I do appreciate, you know, receiving the invite, and certainly am thrilled that I was able to attend. And Phil, I don't know if you caught it, but at the last board meeting, you had made a note during your public comments that you were hoping we'd have the opportunity to meet. And, you know, I was, you know, really happy to be able to, you know, respond at that point and say, yep, I've already coordinated with Christian and, you know, we're all set, you know, for June 6th. So, you know, absolutely appreciate the opportunity. So just a little bit. So I've lived in the region for about 20 years. We live down in Fairfax County. Huntington is my station. You know, I'm a Yellow Line rider. And just to share a little bit, I grew up in the Army, and my last duty station was here in the DC area. And then I started working for Metro in 2012 on the engineering and construction side of the business. You know, in that time, Christian and I were reminiscing the other day. One of my major initiatives has been the Platform Improvement Program. And Christian and I, this was probably 5 or 6 years ago, we were recalling over a weekend, we were out at Braddock Road, you know, with a tape measure and, you know, a 2x4, you know, trying to, you know, figure out how we're going to get after what was known as the Braddock Hump and some of those challenges. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then it was also involved with, you know, some of the tactile, you know, warning strip programs. Mm-hmm. And so I've been very involved in a lot of the initiatives, you know, to make our system as accessible as we can. So that's, you know, very important to me. You know, it is just on a personal note, I was also sharing with Christian, our oldest son goes to a special needs program that folks may be aware of. It's the Pulley Center down in Fairfax County. It's a work transition program. Mm-hmm. And he came home from school about 2 weeks ago with a notice, you know, saying that Metro officials were going to be visiting his school, you know, to assist the students, you know, on not only learning, you know, how to enroll for Metro Access, but also on how to, you know, use the fixed route system. So I, you know, of course, I took a picture of it and sent it to Christian. I was just pretty excited. I think it's pretty awesome that we do a lot of those, you know, outreach efforts. I mean, it's very important. I've known Randy, you know, our incoming general manager for about 10 years. I think you're going to find he's a very passionate supporter of transit. He's very engaging, and certainly is going to be, I'm sure, very involved with the accessibility team. It is, you know, very important to him, you know, as it is, you know, to all of us. But I just did want to share that with you. And there is a lot of good material on things he's done down in Cat Metro, you know, on the internet. So if you have the opportunity to take a look at some of those things, that'll help gain a little bit of insight into his thinking. So Phil, I did want to share a few things, and then certainly, you know, the most important part is, you know, having the opportunity to answer any questions I can and to listen to your team. So Randy is coming, you know, later this summer. We're still trying to nail down a specific date, but you know, that's all, you know, working its way through the process. So that's positive. You know, a lot of people have asked me, you know, it's hectic, there's a lot going on, you know, all these types of things. But, you know, the reality is what we do is very important for the community, you know, bus, rail, and our paratransit services. And so we're just trying to stay focused on those things. You know, there's obviously a lot of noise and, you know, stories are being written and all these types of things. But at the end of the day, we're just really trying to stay focused, you know, on our customers and taking care of our frontline employees, you know, or delivering the service every day, because I think that's what really, you know, matters, and that's what's going to help us get better here. In terms of the 7,000 series, we are, you know, working our way through a plan, and we do expect, you know, to have those cars, eight trains, total of 64 cars, back in service before the end of this month. And that involves a, you know, fairly meticulous digital dial gauge that we're now using to measure, you know, the back-to-back. And certainly there's been a lot of discussion surrounding the investigation, and it, what it's, you know, has been said publicly is that there has been no root cause identified. And of course, folks, you know, the begging question is, well, if you don't understand how this happened, you know, how can you put these things back out in service? And I, what I can share with you is we've done a lot of testing, and what we do understand is it's not a it's not a brittle type of failure mode or something that happens, you know, instantaneously. We've done a lot of testing to demonstrate, you know, that it takes, you know, many days for this type of, you know, for the wheels, you know, to start moving. So we're confident that with a daily inspection, we're going to be well out in front of any type of issues we may experience. So I just wanted to share that, Phil, with the team. Then Silverline, you know, we are making great progress. We are getting very close. And I think we're providing a public update to the board on Thursday. Myself and Lynn Bowersox will be doing that. You know, and I think we'll share some more specific details then, but we are getting close. We understand how important this is for the region. $3 billion investment. It's taken us a lot of time to get there. So really trying to stay focused on the 7,000s, you know, in the Silver Line. You know, and the, you know, the thing is, I'm sure like many of you, you know, traveled around and been to other transit systems. And I think we are very proud, you know, of the accessibility, you know, of our system. But that said, we look at it a lot like safety, right? You're never going to be safe enough, right? It's about continuous improvement and getting better. And I think it's the same with accessibility. There are always ways to get more accessible and to become, you know, to better serve, you know, the larger population. And I think, you know, really, you know, Christian and, you know, Carol and the team, when you look at all the initiatives, I wasn't able to make, you know, the wayfinding meeting, you know, the press announcement that came out last week. But I think those are examples of there's always room to get better. And that's what we're going to stay focused on so we can continue to better serve everybody in the community. So, but Phil, with that, you know, I'm more than happy to fall back in line with the agenda. I don't want to take up too much time, or certainly willing to, you know, answer any questions that you or the team may have.
No, that's super. One question up front on the Silver Line. On Silver Line Stage 1, we came in and did a lot of inspections with Carol of the platforms and tested the accessibility, such as the braille, the color backgrounds, the lighting, etc. And the problem there was, of course, WMATA had no access to anything until the airport authority turned it over to us. And for the current phase two, the question for us would be, at one point, will we be enlisted to go in and take a look at the new stations to make sure that they are accessible? Because we want to help. It's easier to do it sooner than later. So that's a time frame thing. And
No. Well, I guess I would, Carol or Christian, if you have any thoughts on that, I'm sure we're thinking that way, but I'm sure they have some better details.
Yes. Sorry, this is Carol. We have reached out to the Silver Line Phase 2 team, and we will be scheduling something for the AAC as soon as we're able to.
And the reason for asking now, since nobody works in August, it would be nice to know if it suddenly might become available in August, tell our guys that be aware that you might have to take a day out in August rather than wait till September, October. if it will be available. So that was the question about the Silver Line.
Yep.
And we're happy to help anytime.
Thank you, Phil. And it, you know, as I noted, we are getting closer, and I'd like to think, you know, coming here shortly, we'll be able to talk a little more, you know, about some specific dates. You know, I can't do that right now, but we are getting close. And, you know, as Carol noted, it sounds like we're definitely going to do what we did, you know, in phase one. And I'm sure there was a lot of good lessons learned out of that. And definitely, you know, open up that opportunity for, you know, for members of your team.
No, that's terrific. And then the other thing that is ongoing with us has been the lighting project. And Barbara Millville, who leads that, is here this evening. And so if there's anything we can do to help with the lighting, and it's more than getting out of the cave, which of course the board is talking about right now in the press. But there are niceties for the low vision community, such as going from light to dark to light to bright to light to dark, and the phasing and things that go on. And the steps on the escalator have always been a problem. The lights at the entrance to the rail cars have always been a problem because they are so bright and does cause a problem. And so there will be lighting for the second phase of the Silver Line. And again, that's something that would be worth having us look at. And again, when the 8000s move forward, and the engineering group on 8000 has been working with us very closely with Tino and his group. And so there are things that are not immediately obvious that you think about, but, you know, we're there, and Carol is on the ball. She's usually right there watching stuff, and we're happy to help with any of that, getting things done and moving around the stations. The wayfinding is really great anytime we can do that. And of course, the next thing, which Chris will talk about, which is going to be the flat fares. And it's something we've always wondered about for understanding. And I think you were here when Mr. Sorrells and the board decided that the peak of the peak was too confusing for the average rider and was willing to give up $16 million in revenue to eliminate the peak of the peak. And the current calculation of fares on Metro Access is a lot more confusing than the peak of the peak. And what we've asked for in the flat fare is not to give up $16 million in revenue. And Mr. Blake will talk about that a little bit later. But basically, if we get a flat fare between zero and 650, it will actually increase fare box recovery. Because right now, close to 3/4 of the riders are paying minimum fares, and 1/4 are paying maximum fare. And so if we pick a flat fare in the middle, the current low fare people will be paying more, but at least they'll know what it is. And right now, with all of the construction going on and the 7000 series going on and the change in the bus routes, and that's what Chris is going to talk about, you know, after we talk to you. It's confusing, and it, one, increases efficiency for staff. So again, we'll not save money in efficiency on getting it out, and the ridership knows what they're paying, how much money they have to give the driver before they get on the true access. So that's the real push. And again, there's always the fear that fare box recovery will go down, but in fact, it's going to go up. The other thing is the fear that the cost will overwhelm the system and cause the system to go bankrupt. But again, what Chris has been doing with all of the alternatives, such as moving people onto fixed route, and also his abilities ride program, as alternatives, are really allaying that fear. It's not a real fear. But you know, there's some of that that is embedded in the hearts of some of the newer people. So that's my pitch. So having done that, the major things we want to do is anything you need, and your son can let you know. Also, tell your son about conditional eligibility for Metro Access. That's the most wonderful thing that exists, because a lot of people think you have to use it 100% of the time. And there are a number of people in the low vision community, or people with mobility issues, or people with cognitive issues, that there are just certain trips that they can't take on fixed route because it requires multiple transfers, or it's dark and they can't see. And so at that point, they take Metro Access, but other times they can take fixed route. And so everybody saves and everybody wins, because there are fewer Metro Access trips, which the WMATA saves $60 a trip. And by permitting Metro Access rider to ride on fixed route, well, that bus or that train was going to run anyway, whether they were there or not. And so you're not really giving them a free ride. To be a free ride, it's not costing anything to give that ride. You're actually saving $50 or $60 to give that ride. So conditional is wonderful, and that's something new within the last 8 years, and it needs to be explained. And you know, hopefully they told you some that when you went to
resources. No, thank you, Phil. Plus community. I think we're going to
So let me throw it open to the committee. If people would ask a question of Mr. Off, please raise your hand, and Anu will call you for your 2 minutes to ask the question, and then we'll get on to Mr. Blake to talk about all the things he's going to talk about. So I don't see any hands. Anu, do you see any?
I do not see any hands, Chair Posner. Well, Patrick just raised his hand, followed by Steve. So Patrick, go ahead.
Okay, so Patrick, lead off.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it. Thank you, sir, for coming, speaking to us tonight. With all the infrastructure money that's coming in right now, can you talk about that? It's sort of a big picture question. Where is what I'm sure we'll be getting some of that money. Where will we see that money being spent as far as immediate procurements or upgrades in the WMATA system?
Oh, thank you, Patrick. You know, that is a question we do tender regularly. I mean, to your point, it's, you know, it's great news, you know, for the transit community, for sure. I think, you know, the bottom line is we're still trying to finalize. We don't know exactly, you know, how much we're going to get or where precisely it's going to be utilized. But I can tell you, there's going to be a lot of focus on zero emission bus infrastructure, you know, the facilities to support that. I think, you know, there, you know, the platform work we'll be doing, we think we're going to be in pretty good shape, you know, after the end of this summer. So I don't expect we'd see much there. But certainly, you know, the zero emission bus is going to be, you know, a really big priority for us moving forward. And I think, you know, a lot of the stuff you have been seeing, just in terms of, you know, our traction power and our signal system and, you know, our tracks, keeping those, you know, safe and reliable is going to continue to be a focus for sure. So Patrick, we probably don't have a great answer for you right now. We were actually just talking about this internally the other day, and the team is still working through the details, you know, on the funding amounts and, you know, precisely what that will be used for. So I'm sure, you know, within the coming year or so, we'll be able to share that, you know, more definitively with our customers.
Thank you. I also sent a note to Carol. There's a new grant that has just been issued through the FTA for disability accessibility over tracks. And the thing that popped into my mind are the VRE tracks at L'Enfant Plaza. We've had a number of VRE commuters complain about that over the years, the hard time they have getting from VRE over to the metro station. And so I thought that's a pot of money that, maybe we could have access to. And so let me throw it over. Steve, you're next, and then Doris is next as the next two hands.
Okay, thank you, Phil. Steve Kaplan. I have two brief questions. One question is, would WMATA consider setting up I hate the word ombudsman, but more a customer service organization that riders could call if instead of just providing a customer service one-way comment online, they wanted more of an interaction so they could, in more detail, explain their points and get some kind of follow-up. And my second question is possibly an incremental weekly pass, such as used by a number of systems in Europe, whereby the rides are accumulated, let's say by $2 each, until they reach the $12 limit, just breaking the concern that my understanding is most people who don't have these passes have, that there may be a week or two or three when if they sign up, they may not use it and may lose money. Those are my two questions.
Oh, thank you, Steve. So Steve, I do know on the customer service side, that is certainly, feedback we get, quite regularly that, there's always room, like we were talking about in terms of accessibility and safety, I think, customer service is, kind of the same thread. There's always, ways to get better. So I will definitely ask around, Steve. I hadn't heard, a specific initiative, the way you termed it. But I think where you were going was essentially just, not a tweet or a recorded message or, a canned answer, but somebody who could actually converse, with the customer, to better articulate what was, happening in that specific scenario, if I understood you correctly.
Right. Yeah, just one sentence here. That's right. More often than not, a comment that's made online, given the forum, is never really made to full opportunity to be made fully, and therefore, I think Metro doesn't benefit from ideas and from concerns and also from suggestions of the people who know the systems best, and that's the writers.
Thank you, Steve. Let Doris go next, and then Paul, I see your hand is up. So Doris, go ahead, take your 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to suggest in terms of budgets for infrastructure construction, particularly pedestrian infrastructure, bus stops accessible and such, that the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments and its Transportation Planning Board is responsible, as I understand it, for prioritizing projects throughout the region for the federal funding that's coming from FTA, and perhaps some collaboration between, I don't know how much WMATA is, I'm sure they are, but how much WMATA is making the need over there for prioritizing transit projects, particularly in pedestrian and bus infrastructure. And Deborah and I serving, you know, as a liaison between AAC and Access for All Committee over there, hopefully could bring some issues regarding that funding and priority. And I'm just springboarding off of some of the information that Tino sent around over the weekend. The other thing in terms of customer service, I have to say I wrote off customer service. I don't know how many days. But the thing that I think needs funding and it needs to be expanded back at least to its former levels is the customer information service and its hours of operation and days of operation, because not everybody is a computer user, and even if you're walking around, you may have a cell phone, but not walking around with a smartphone or whatever, and yet, one of the things that's very important is to know when and where and how soon I'm going to get a bus, or even with subway service, but particularly when you're out on the line to get a bus. And it's, you know, virtually useless now. And the automated system protocols that we have suggested and requested of them have never been implemented. It's been, I think, Mr. Chair, more than 5 years since we first started asking them to change those protocols to try to make them simpler for you to use, to even just find out the next bus. And so I'm wondering if that's being looked at, because that would make usage more fluid. And I'm saying this after finding out in the last couple of weeks that an important bus route that I frequently used coming back from work and around into Alexandria and then over, making my connection to where I live in Falls Church, has been sent over to Dash Bus for service, and it doesn't, you know, I don't have a seamless trip anymore and have to wait half an hour or an hour for the next bus at Southern Towers before I can get where I'm going. So on the Alexandria end of the trip. So I'm saying is what was done to the 7 bus by changing its routes is a disaster now for some consumers, and really know what to do. So those are the kinds of things that are going to bring back to using the bus, and yet.
Thank you, Doris.
So that's it. That's my comment.
Super. Paul is the chair of a Metro Access Committee and our resident expert in special ed, as you can see by the flag behind him. So, Paul, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. I am the current chair of the Metro Access Subcommittee, so 3 things I'm going to talk about. We've talked about at the committee and AAC level before. As Mr. Blake says, always never hurts to put things out there. I know we talked about as a committee and as AAC about, for Metro Access customers, some kind of pass for riders, so we still push that out there. We also have always pushed out on every work plan, and I know Metro Access staff has been working hard in this next proposal to hopefully someday we get real-time information on our the arrival of our Metro Access vehicles, like other cities I've said that has it. And it can be a very useful tool where customers are empowered to help make, you know, travel decisions. If their vehicle's late, it's things like that. And like, you know, we just want what's equal that the equivalent of what other regular bus and rail riders have right now. And now we have these customer service satisfaction surveys coming back where they're giving us feedback quarterly. So that will also be another piece of information we get to see from, we get a pulse of where the customer's knowledge base is and further recommendations we can make. Those are the things I'm just bringing front to you. That's all.
Oh, thank you. So turn it back to Mr. Off, and then we, when he is finished, we'll flip over to Mr. Blake. We're right on schedule. Hopefully, we haven't asked for too much.
No. Well, thank you, Patrick, Steve, Doris, Paul. I mean, it's really appreciate your feedback and your engagement, you know, with the community and the committee. You know, this is a very vital service that we provide. And I think as we've been talking about, we certainly recognize that there are a lot of initiatives underway, you know, to make our service better. You know, I am aware that, you know, to the flat fare, I believe starting Phil and Christian this beginning of the next fiscal year on the 1st of July, you know, weekends, I think, are going to have a flat rate. And then I believe late night service, you know, after 9:30. So it, you know, it does seem like there's some good traction and some good things happening. You know, a lot of these things, you know, you kind of walk into them. So I think that's, you know, a sign of where we're going there. And I think that's, you know, was really, you know, great to hear that, you know, those things are, you know, in the works. No, so, you know, absolutely, you know, I've taken notes here and I'm sure I'll, you know, go over these with Christian, but, you know, at the end of all this, again, I do really just, you know, my honor and privilege to, you know, serve in this interim capacity and, you know, try and serve the community. Certainly a very, you know, important part of that is, you know, the AAC and what you do. So thank you.
No, thank you. That's great. You'll hear from us again.
No, absolutely. I'm sure I'll be back again.
Yes, except in August when we take time off.
Yep. The board does the summer recess, so to speak.
Yes, to get organized. And then they come in September and tell us what to do.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's terrific. And you've got a great background to do what's being done. Your background, one, of experience using the system, and your engineering background is really super. So that's terrific. But when the new trains come in.
Yep, absolutely. And kind of an interesting piece of trivia is Carol and I started on the same day in 2012.
I don't know why.
So it's kind of, we've known each other for quite a while. So.
Well, that may have been when I joined the AAC as a young kid with Paul. That's when we started. So, yes, we've matured.
Yeah. But Phil, I did. And Christian, I do need to get running here. I actually have another call at 6:30 that I've got to prepare for at least the best I can.
Get some sugar so you've got the energy.
No, absolutely. But Phil or Christian, if there's no other, you know, questions or comments, I, you know, was going to get running here. But thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. That's terrific. And you have an open invitation to any one of our bus, rail, metro access in this committee. Anytime you want, just pop in.
No, thank you, Phil.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you. Good luck.
All right. I hope everybody has a great evening.
Thank you.
All thank right. You too. All the all best.
Right. See you later.
Bye-bye. Okay, Mr. Blake, you're up.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. I think you all had a very productive discussion with our interim GM and CEO. And as you all know, as we discussed in the past, when we have these special guests, I like to remain quiet in the background because I don't want to take up any valuable time of the special guest or interfere with your direct discussions, advocacy, advice to the committee, as we saw with Mr. Summerford and the app. So I think that was a great discussion. And just so you know, next week, we will have the interim chief operating officer at the bus and rail subcommittee meeting. And I believe, I'm not sure if it's confirmed, at next month's AAC meeting, we will have the board chair. That's kind of the way we're trying to move this. And then September, perhaps, we may have the new GM and CEO at that meeting.
Yes, Thursday we may find out who the new board chair is.
Well, that's true. There is that.
The election committee is meeting on Thursday to decide what's going on. So, yes.
So that, but just want you to know that's the layout we've been trying, yeah. So that this committee, who by declaration is tasked with advising the board, yes, as well as staff, but we want to make sure your voice is being directly communicated to the powers that be within the authority, without any interference from Chris Blake or anybody else in access. We want you to have that unfiltered communication, as you do each month at the meeting as well. Now, on to the flat fare. This would be kind of a recap of a report I gave at the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. I haven't had any new updates since then. As Mr. Off mentioned, we currently do have a flat fare on the weekends, which is a great thing. You know, we've been enjoying that for quite a while now. On July 1st, the flat fare will extend to every day after 9:30. And again, I don't have any updates for every day before 9:30, but we're almost there. And again, this is, I mean, you all, unlike for folks like myself who grew up in Florida, we just kind of hear about DC politics from afar. You all have seen it up close and personal, and you know that a lot of things do come incremental. And that's kind of where this has been going. And as staff, we're going to continue to do our part to provide the information as it's requested as to any impact of an all-day flat fare. And I don't want to get into what our advice is, but I could just tell you, I mean, I'm very transparent. It hasn't been anti a flat fare. You can trust and believe that. I think you all know that about me in terms of where we're going. So in the meantime, the things we're doing again is continuing to lower the average fare through these means that are taking place and offering thousands of free fares each month through the alternatives, and we want to continue down that line and making that work as we also continue to keep up the safety, quality, and reliability of the Metro Access service overall. So, yeah, I don't have any great news tonight in terms of something new and different, but July 1st, those who do use Metro Access after 9:30, we'll see a flat fare for sure. And that will then make out of every day, I mean, every day of the week, we only have those few hours remaining to change a policy one day. And I think I have a feeling it's coming, but we have to take a look at a broader perspective. And that's the task of the board as well as our colleagues. Metro Access really does not operate in a bubble by ourselves. If we did, we probably could do a whole lot of other things. But we are part of a larger authority, and the funding is all part of one large pool of funds. So when the board is looking at the budget and considering fare policy, they look at the overall picture and not just one mode at a time. So we're making progress. I think you all have seen it. The numbers are showing that there's progress being made, and we'll just continue to plug away.
No, that's super. Just keep pointing out we're the x-axis.
So, yes.
yes, that's true. As a reminder that came up at Metro Access was the use of Uber. Uber has multiple levels when you book your ride. And the lowest level, which most people do get, is pick up in the area. And so you book your ride, you give them the address, and then they give you a box. And they'll show up somewhere in that area. And then you have to find them. And the problem, as we found out at the last meeting, is if you're low vision, you can't find them. And then they have to talk you in if you can actually get there, and then they charge extra and what have you. And so I wonder if the contract agreement that you have made, not you, but WMATA and Metro Access has made, will upgrade the Uber trips to one where they actually do show up at the address.
Right. And so let me be clear. I'm with you on that. I see where you're going. And yes, there are times personally I have used that. Is it nearby? There's a term. There's a term.
Yeah, exactly.
A couple of blocks, and yes, it's a little lower than Uber X. I want to tell you, Phil, that has never been one of the options used for booking Uber trips through the Abilities Ride program.
Mm-hmm.
We use Uber X for almost exclusive.
Okay.
And then there's Uber Wave for any wheelchair accessible trips. Now, one of the things we did, and we did use, and it's still on the table in the future, but not right now, is not Uber nearby, but Uber, I forgot the name, we haven't used it in so long, but basically it's the Uber Share Ride program.
Yes.
Where that's a little lower than Uber X, but not as low as this Uber nearby version.
Yes.
We have used that at times early on, especially during the testing phase. And what I found was the incremental reduction in cost was not worth the effort in terms of the customer experience and getting picked up and then taken to their destination. So the Uber, it's not Uber Transit, I don't believe, but that was an Uber Share version. Okay. That's right below Uber X. And while that could come back, it could. I'm not saying it can't, because it is lower than Uber X, but we have 99.1%, because we have used some Uber Wave, although they have to, if we use too much Uber Wave, then we're cannibalizing the service for people who are not part of the Metro Access service. So I'm really conscious about that. And I know Heidi has, I've kept in touch with Heidi about the Uber Wave and the Uber Wave availability. And we don't want to, we as Metro Access do not want to cannibalize the Uber Wave vehicles for Metro Access trips when there are people out there who, again, not part of Metro Access or chose not to book their trip through Metro Access, who need Uber Wave on an on-demand basis. But the challenge that you're talking about, Phil, though, is real. And that is, you've seen it on Metro Access, and Uber has it at times as well. Although I must say, I think just my experience through this process, I think Uber's GPS is slightly better, just slightly better than Metro Access. But the challenge is that GPS has never been an absolute fail-safe technology. And when there's street closures, a lot of construction, we love development. That means the city is building or the region is building and thriving and growing. GPS challenges do come into play. So we're working very handily with Uber. We're making sure now that customers, because early on in this program, a Metro Access customer using Uber could not call the cab company, could not call the driver. They would have to call, where's my ride? Where's my ride? We have to call the driver. You know, that's completely inefficient. Well, we've moved that up now where they don't have to call, where's my ride? The phone number to the driver is in each Uber trip. I've tested it out personally. I've been doing a lot of these trips myself and getting feedback from people like Bridget Doherty, who you all know, and she's one of my in-house testers. So we're trying to do everything we can to replicate the experience of the Uber app without requiring customers to use the Uber app, because that would then require customers to have a smartphone. And we don't want Abilities Ride to be an elitist type of program where only people with smartphones can use the program. So what you're saying is real. It's not because of the Uber trip that we're selecting. It's because there's still some not perfection in the GPS world.
Yes. That sounds good. That sounds good. And actually, the shared ride is very much like a Metro Access ride.
Correct.
I take it all the time. You have another person, and if you're lucky, you're the first one dropped off.
Correct.
Not really the second, but the shared ride is only two people. I mean, it's not disastrous.
And that's why I just want to say to the customers, and we'll be letting folks know, it's, I've never guaranteed that an abilities ride trip will always be a one-on-one trip. The only thing we've ever guaranteed, and the only thing we will ever guarantee with abilities ride, is that the trip will be free of charge.
Well, that's good.
That's the key. Yes. Yes. Or unless some point in the future we may charge a dollar or maybe to some very, but it will always be a fare less than the Metro access fare. Because that's the way we're building free fixed route service, a modest fare perhaps on abilities ride, and then the regular, hopefully flat fare on Metro access.
Terrific. And we're right on schedule. Let me ask you about AEC elections and the committee discussion.
Chair Posner, this is Zenu.
We have
three people who have their hands up, Thomas Mangrum, Vanessa Coles, and Doris Ray.
Okay, so I'll answer their questions. Yes. And then when I'm finished, I'll turn it over to Anu to discuss the elections, because she's booted me from the elections board. She's now in charge of the elections board.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that traditionally, we've tried to have the elections when we have a full committee, and since we don't have the new members yet, and we won't have them until September, we might want to put off discussing elections in October, November.
Okay, but there's also, there may be an update on that as well, because there is a board meeting this month, and there's one next month.
Right.
Well, you're right. Then if they don't do it this month, then if next month, you're right.
Yes, we won't get anybody till September.
It won't be September.
And I know their election committee is meeting on Thursday, and so they may not have a board chair.
Gotcha.
Until July. And so that's why I think we can talk about the process as far as, the voting. And I think that's fine. Talk about what the candidates have their little speech as to why they or don't want to be in leadership. But I think it's worth waiting a little bit before we actually do it to make sure that we know who the new board members are, who the new chair is, who the new members of our committee are, and give them a chance to get their feet wet and go through orientation. So I will let everybody go. Why don't we let Thomas go first, because he hasn't spoken yet. And then we'll let Vanessa go, and then we'll let Doris go. And 2 minutes for everybody. So Thomas, unmute yourself.
Yes.
Translator.
This is Thomas. Thank you. I have two questions. For Metro Access, I think the Metro Access got to get a lot better when it comes to late trips. Because Sunday, I had a late trip pick me up from what they call Macamess Park, but it's Marina Park, because I was up there for the drum session. But they had the Hispanic community celebrating their holiday up there, and I had a good time. But getting picked up from there, though, the ride was late. And by the time I realized the ride was late, and I called twice, by the way. And they wound up telling me they had to find a ride for me. Because before, I had wound up some people telling me, or the driver went home. And I'd be asking people, do you have a way to check the manifest of the driver to make sure the driver went to all the places that they must have went to before they went home, so you could replace somebody. They did not replace nobody, a driver for me, until I brought it up to them that I wasn't picked up yet. So they didn't even know that I didn't get picked up, what have you. And so they had to find another driver, because the driver that was on their manifest wasn't there to complete the trip. And also, when it comes to mobility ride, I never got the free ride. I signed up for it or whatnot. I don't know why not mobility ride is just for people who's able to walk or whatnot, but I'm a wheelchair user. So I would like to get some free rides once in a while. But I would like for Metro Access to automatically, when they know the driver, whatever, whether or not it's a car accident or the driver went home, to automatically set it up with another driver without somebody have to call. Because I could have easily got caught up with what was going on Sunday and still been there for like 2 hours before I made the call. It shouldn't be set up like that.
Okay, a couple of things. Number one, this weekend, I could tell you, there was a rough sort of weekend, and I was on the case of the team all weekend. So there's probably a few folks who've had some impact this weekend, and we're working with management of the OCC about that. So that, I'm not denying that at all, that there may have been some challenges there for sure. In terms of drivers, just so you know, I just want to give you the process. Just like if you go on your job or I go on my job one day, I go to work tomorrow morning, let's say, but 10 o'clock in the morning, I fall ill. My stomach is hurting because I had a bad breakfast or in the case of some other cases, their child school calls and they have to leave. That does happen. So it's not going to be every day that every single driver is going to finish his or her route, because there are things beyond the control of Metro Access Management that may require a driver to go home early, just like I may have to go home early one day for work or you or someone else. So that does happen. However, that's not up to, and I'm not sure the communication, and we've talked to the OCC about some of the communication, I think in an effort to try to offer a customer an excuse, they just make it worse. I think they said it with Richard Nixon, the cover-up is worse than the crime. Just be honest with the customer and say, we're late, we dropped the ball, we're sending you a vehicle. But a driver leaving early is not a reason for you not to be picked up. One, because the system should recognize that and reassign your trip to a vehicle. And two, the way, you know, I've talked about planning a whole lot throughout this pandemic, and we're trying to be good planners overall. We have more than enough resources on the street that even if a driver does, or two or three or four, fall ill or something goes wrong, we have other resources there to come pick you up. So I will have my team investigate your trip in particular. One, I can tell you, I'm not surprised that it was late. I know we had a lot of challenges over the weekend due to some road closures and some other circumstances, but a driver not being able to finish his or her route should not have been a reason that you were picked up late or an excuse given by the person in the call center. Now, in terms of the abilities ride and the free trips, now I don't want to get into any individual's personal case, but we'll talk about it, you know, separately, Mr. Mangrum. But as I've mentioned on these meetings before, what we're doing with folks who are in need of wheelchair accessible vehicles, your trips are being selected through the computer just like everyone else's trip. Keep in mind, there is no guarantee that you have a trip that is being moved to a free ride. But what we're doing is, even if your trip is on Metro Access, at the end of the month, you're getting a trip credit. And Heidi and a few others have confirmed the receipt of the credits. I have the record of the customers. And what I would do with you, Mr. Mangrum, I'll call you tomorrow. I will look at your record and I can go over the precise amount of trip credits we've given you, which means under the circumstances, you know, let me just compare and contrast you with the Paul Semaphore, for example. Paul's trip is selected to be on abilities ride. You send a taxi or an Uber for him, and that trip will be free of charge. If your trip has been selected in these months and days, right now, instead of sending a wheelchair accessible vehicle, due to the limited number of waves that are out there in the private sector hands, you would still be transported by Metro Access, but at the end of the month, your trip will be credited back to your account, so it'll be free of charge as well. So you're getting free trips, but you're riding on a Metro Access van instead of a taxi cab or an Uber Wave.
Thank you. It's super. Vanessa, Doris, and then Marcy. And so 2 minutes for Vanessa. Let's roll.
Okay. Thank you. It's Vanessa. My question is for you, Mr. Blake, and I just want a clarification because I will be taking information back to the consumers. You said 9:30, and maybe you said a.m. or p.m. I just didn't hear. So starting July 1st, what was that?
Oh, yes, ma'am. 9:30 p.m. will be the beginning of a flat fare for Metro Access. The evening fare will be a flat fare of $4, just like the weekend fare is a flat fare of $4 now.
Okay, because I did have some consumers in a meeting I was in. They were concerned about getting a flat rate for the 9:30 a.m. period, but I expected them, I hope correctly,
Not yet. That's what Phil was talking to the interim GM about, and that's what I was saying.
Right.
Is a incremental step, and that's really the last step. We've covered the entire week of flat fares except for the morning and afternoon and early evening times.
Thank you. Let me really point out that it's a flat fare of $2 for the normal rider, versus a flat fare of $1 for the elderly and people with disabilities. And I'm not being greedy, but right. Just wanted to point that out.
That's a very good point. I mean, and I had not thought about that prior to us engaging in these discussions. So right now, all of our analysis, I'll just be frank and transparent with you, have been on twice the regular fare, but you and members of the committee, as well as other disability stakeholders in general, have now raised the point that the Metro Access fare perhaps should be based on twice the disability fixed route fare. I think that's a fair, no pun intended, point to raise, and you should continue to do so. But that's where your strategy of having a range, hey, here's a flat fare in this range, and what number are you going to select? And right now, the number has been tied to $4, but no stopping you from continuing to explore other means of calculating the metrics.
Actually, three of the new board members asked me about that. So I didn't just come out of the air. They asked me about that when they had their meeting with me. They asked about, well, you guys are all old and disabled.
So, I mean, if you keep this up, pretty soon the AAC is going to need an office on K Street.
Yes.
That's for lobbyists, for those. Just...
Yes. Okay, Doris, you're up, and then Marcy.
Well, I didn't get a clarification. They wanted to know why the 9:30 p.m. So is there anything that I can give them?
Yes. Well, right now, because Metro has agreed to give all customers riding fixed route services a flat fare after 9:30 p.m. each weekday, the way they agreed previously to give all customers using fixed route, that's bus and rail, on the weekends, a flat fare all day on the weekends. So the board still has not yet decided to give all riders on fixed route services a flat fare during the weekdays prior to 9:30, nor have they decided to carve out a flat fare just for Metro Access.
I'm asking, why was the 9:30 timeframe selected? PM.
Because it's the late night fare, and that's the time that the board chose. They chose that they can afford in terms of lost revenue versus increased ridership. They felt the 9:30 late night trips can be made up in terms of increased demand without losing too much revenue to pay for the services.
Okay, that's an answer. Thank you.
Okay, Doris.
Two things. One is to follow up about the Metro Access fare being based on the subsidized fare for persons with disabilities. And I'm wondering whether that's something that needs to be researched regarding the definition in terms of how metro access fares are calculated under FTA rules. With the acknowledgement that, as Phil and all of us know, the fare for metro access can be as low as our board wants to take it, and we advocate for, because there's no floor, there's only a ceiling. But then the second question, could you explain now the abilities ride program and the terms under which a consumer is able to get a ride on the abilities ride program? Because initially it was 24-hour on-demand service, which was very valuable because it allowed people to travel without it, all the trial and trouble with inaccessible taxis and people who are on fixed incomes to be able to ride for emergencies and whatever, when the fixed route is not running. So I'm wondering, though, as I understand it, it's not as wide open as that in any of the jurisdictions, or am I wrong about that? And is Maryland doing one thing and Virginia doing another?
No, you're correct that the Abilities Ride program has been changed in terms of how a trip is scheduled. So previously, yes, there were trips where you could call the cab company directly and book a trip, pay a certain amount of the fare, Metro Access paid another portion of the fare, and then you paid anything above that. And that was available on demand, same day, like you said, literally 24/7. What we're doing now, though, is a little different. It gives more balance to the program, in our opinion, and it gives the customer a benefit and it gives Metro a benefit. Customer's benefit is that if your trip is selected, it's free of charge. So you're getting that fare discount. You're getting fare relief from the Metro Access fare or any fare, quite frankly. For Metro Access, it allows us to plan overall service for a dedicated Metro Access a lot better. So you call the Metro Access reservation line and book a trip like you normally would. The night before, we use a computer application that randomly selects trips to be moved to a taxi or an Uber. And if your trip is selected to be moved to a taxi or an Uber, that trip will be free of charge. If your trip is not selected to be moved to a taxi or Uber, it will be provided by Metro Access at the regular fare.
Thank you.
Okay.
Marcy?
So it's not a backup for cancellations or anything. Not like cancellations, but same day cancellations. It's
correct. Yeah, I wouldn't call it a backup if that's what it was previously. This is more of a supplement.
Yeah. So and then the question about the basis for the for utilizing twice the subsidized fare. In other words, the flat fare, but based on the subsidized fare.
Right, but I think you pointed it out. I mean, and I always try to caveat and say, hey, I'm not an expert, but my understanding of the ADA is, as you stated, a transit agency can charge you as little as they want to. There is no floor, but there is a ceiling. There's a max that WMATA could charge you. But theoretically,
if WMATA wanted to say all Metro Access trips were free of charge, they could do that. And that's why I believe Phil Posner's approach as a steady lobbyist that he's showing to be has been a flat fare of between $0 and $4. So if someone decides, if a majority of the board decides that they like the concept of a flat fare for Metro Access and they like it being based on twice the disability fare as opposed to twice the regular fixed route fare, that's a decision they absolutely can make. And we would follow that. At this point in time, there is no prohibition on how to calculate a paratransit fare in the ADA, as long as your calculation doesn't result in it being more than twice the fastest regular fixed route fare.
Yes, perfectly stated. Morsi, take it.
Oh, okay. I just want to add to one of the previous speakers on Metro Access. A few months ago, my girlfriend and I were going to a dinner with some friends, and she had made her ride the night before or the day before, and when Metro Access was 45 minutes late, he called and they said, "We're looking for a driver with an accessible taxi." Now, if they knew that, couldn't they call and say, da-da-da-da, they're going to be late? And she would decide whether to cancel or not. It's such common courtesy that, because I could see if you made the ride, you know, like an hour before, they can't find a van, but this was made 24 hours ago. They should know if they have a driver and a van.
I think I understand the question. It sounds as though what we're saying is that the trip was originally scheduled on a taxi. Perhaps the taxi did not have a driver. In that case, you did call Where's My Ride, which was the right thing to do. And if Where's My Ride cannot find you another free trip, they're supposed to dispatch a Metro Access vehicle. So going back to Doris's point, Metro Access, as I've always been saying, is the safety net. So if the trip is on a taxi or Uber, and a taxi or Uber is not providing the service, and we have a lot of resources out throughout the entirety of the service area, Metro Access is your backup, and they should have sent the vehicle. So there shouldn't have been a long wait. I know you said it was a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
But it's never too far away for us not to look into it. So I will have a member of the team reach out to you, Marcy, get some details so that we can look into it and follow up at the next meeting.
Okay, because what I'm trying to say is common courtesy would have been to call us at a moment before the ride was due and say, "We don't have a vehicle," you know, instead of waiting till we call twice to find out what was going on.
Yes, and I agree with you. And if this were, in fact, a taxi trip, that is what we're telling the companies to do. But let me find out.
Metro Access trip.
Oh, you're saying this was Metro Access right from the start?
from the beginning.
Gotcha. I will let us investigate. You'll hear from Ms. Anderson or a member of her team, and we're going to get the details, respond to you, and then at the next meeting, this will be one of our report outs in terms of informing the entire committee as well as community listening as to what actually occurred, what was our response, where, if we did drop the ball, and what can we do, and what have we done even in that case to avoid these type of circumstances in the future.
Right. Communication is half the battle.
And indeed.
Well said. Thank you. To get back on schedule, we'll go to public comment now. And we have two right now, Ansel Torres and Kelly Simino, and we're going to add Steve Kaffin to public comment. So, Mr. Torres, you're up.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Go ahead, Mr. Torres.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Very good. All right. So I have a few things I need to say today. First, let me praise Mr. Colbert at Eligibility. He's making a trip to New York last week, and some things didn't work right, and he was able to get it fixed for me in a very timely fashion, even though I think initially somebody dropped the ball at Eligibility, but it was a good save and everything worked out well, along with Abilities Right, that continues to work very well for me. However, there are some other comments that I'd like to make about things that concern me. So this evening we had Andy off speaking to us, and in true Wiedefeld style, he never once mentioned Metro access. And you know, the AAC staff was very happy to yuck it up with him, you know, as though this is sort of a country club meeting. You know, everybody is wonderful and happy, but nobody's really addressing the serious issues that are facing, you know, the people who have to use the service regularly, you know, the rest of us who don't get to backslap with executives at Metro Access. I think that is very unhealthy, as even advisors or advocates or whatever AAC calls itself. The chairman, his responsibility is one of his responsibility to ensure that the information that he's giving out is accurate. He mentioned something about $60 per ride to that it costs Metro to transport folks on the Metro Access buses, and it clearly isn't. If he read the budget, he would see that it is more than twice that. Why is it that booking for Metro Access is two levels down on the Metro, on the WMATA website, when the trip planner is on just about every page? That is discriminatory and unfair, and that needs to be fixed. Yes, it was moved up. I'm not sure what the explanation is for keeping it still down in the basement. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Kelly?
Hi, thank you. This is Kelly Simino. And I wanted to make a public comment today related to an incident that was very, you know, disturbing for me to hear, but unfortunately is along the same vein as Mr. Manos's, I believe, depiction of a problem, as well as Ms. Goldstein's problem that she articulated just now, and that is the reliability of Metro Access, especially at nighttime. I was made aware, I work out at an adaptive fitness gym, and a lot of my, the people that I work out with, we rely on Metro Access for transportation. And of course, as people with disabilities, you know, it's always, anytime you take the control out of somebody, it's, you know, can be a really vulnerable situation. But for the disability community, we certainly have to give that control over to public transportation just to be able to get from point A to point B. And the particular situation that I became aware of was related to an individual who uses a mobility device that requires a lift, and, you know, Metro Access is appropriately the right transportation for his needs, getting him, in this case, from Virginia to Maryland. But on that night, he continued to call when the ride didn't come up, and he was just told that they were short-staffed and that he would have to have expected that because it was a Saturday night. And he shouldn't have had to expect that because he booked a ride, and there should be an expectation that instead of sitting on a sidewalk at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, as it turned out, that he instead would be communicated with and receive a safe ride home. And so that was going to be my comment. But in light of the other stories that we've heard today, I think my ask would be for Mr. Blake and the accessibility team to start gathering not just experiences, but numbers. How often are people who are relying upon Metro Access at nighttime not getting service within 1 hour, within 2 hours, not receiving the service at all? How often is this ball being dropped? Because it poses an incredible safety risk. It leaves people literally stranded on the side of the road. And I think as a committee, we need to take a very deep dive into this issue.
Thank you. Terry Ann, would you like to respond to that?
Well, let me just start by saying, no, I mean, think the point is well made. We certainly can provide some numbers. I have to get details from you, and we're going to find out who the customer is. And I know you say you don't want just stories, but I have to understand who we're speaking about so that we can then go back to hear what someone tells you. If they've been told that they should expect that, well, again, that's wrong. I mean, that's just not the way the system is set up. So if that is happening, we have to hear that. I have to hear the recording and then look into the trip in particular to determine what actually happened. There are times, and I won't say it never happens, where there's been an excessively late trip. That does happen. There are times, though, when I'm told, and I'll get on the phone, and customers call me all the time directly and say, I've been waiting 2 hours. Well, you may have been waiting 2 hours, but your pickup time was not 2 hours ago. Everything is a circumstance. We try to accommodate customers. I always say this all the time. We're in the accommodation business. And if somebody calls and they want an earlier trip, we do our very best to accommodate that trip. And I think we have enough resources on the street to accommodate that trip. If a trip is running late, it's the job of the call center to try to find another vehicle, because again, we have so many vehicles on the street, so many resources. And when Mr. Torres talks about the cost per trip, yes, that's the plan cost per trip. And that's the way we've been budgeting it. So it looks like every single Metro Access trip costs twice what Mr. Posner was stating. But the truth of the matter is budgeted, because this board, as I've been saying, the board and the leadership have granted Metro Access just about all that we wanted. And the actual expenses, though, are a lot lower and much closer to what Mr. Posner actually was saying. So we're planning a service that is based on being a safety net while lowering the cost of the actual budgeted. So when a customer says to you, Kelly, that I called Metro Access twice and they told me we don't have resources, that's just simply not true. And I've got to hear that and find out why that person said that. If they don't give a correct answer, they're not my employees, but they're not the people I want working for me. And So without even calling up the OCC tonight, because they don't have any more information than I do at the moment, we want to get the information from you, get the specific case information, and then we'll report back at the next meeting for everyone, but we'll also report back to you as well as the customer prior to the next meeting. But the way we've set this up, there should be no case in which a vehicle goes down for whatever reason that we don't have another vehicle very nearby, because that's the way we budgeted over these last few years, thanks to the board. We have the resources in terms of money to put enough vehicles on the street to avoid these circumstances.
And this is Kelly. I'm certainly happy to, and I would like to be able to give you this specific individual. I'll email you privately so you can investigate the circumstances of that. I'm curious. I guess one of the things I was going to ask in the public comment is if you have seen, just overall, of course, everyone can see in many industries there's just a shortage of workers. Is that potentially a problem that we're facing within Metro Access, especially like nighttime?
I would say no, because we created the Abilities Ride program. And when you look at the amount of resources between the private taxi providers, the Uber drivers, plus the Metro Access drivers and vans, we have enough resources. Now, if we didn't have the Abilities Ride program, would Metro Access be in a quote unquote driver shortage? Yes, we would. We don't have the ideal number of drivers that we would like. If I just woke up and, had the fairy ball and could make a wish, there's a certain number at this stage that I would like to see in terms of drivers. We don't have that number, but we have a whole lot of resources, a lot more resources than actual demand. So no, that's not a problem for us at this point.
Okay.
Thank you. We've got to get back on schedule. So what I'd like to do is go back to the beginning of the agenda, which is the approval of the minutes and the report to the board. So can I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
A second?
I'll second.
Without objection. I don't hear any objections. The minutes are approved. The report to the board, as usual, is a draft, and the final report will be done following the Bus Rail Committee and the Metro Access Committee. And once we find out what's happening with the board, because they are having their election discussion this coming Thursday. So we're good on that. We now have approximately 3 minutes left to get back on schedule with the Bus Rail Subcommittee and the Metro Access Subcommittee. So we haven't heard from Denise yet tonight. So Denise, you get 2 minutes.
Yes, this is Ms.
Get 1 minute.
Okay. This is Ms. Rush. Can you hear me?
Very well.
Okay. I think I've suggested it years ago, but I think it needs to be suggested or brought up again. The same way that you have to give Metro Access 2 hours notice that you are canceling, and if you don't and you keep doing that, you are sent a notice, a warning, that you are not canceling in proper time. There should be something in the system that says, here's a appointment, somebody needs to be picked up at 10 o'clock to 10:30, and at 9:30, it starts blinking saying, this trip is not going to be made. It's not going to happen. We need to notify the customer. We need to pay attention to this trip. And then that way, the customer, or they found a trip for that person before an hour not being picked up. Is there any way that can be done? It starts flashing on the screen or turn red or something. We're not going to make this trip.
I was just going to tell you, you're speaking my tune, and I just went to a conference. I've had heated, but not, I mean, professional, don't get me wrong, but they've been heated discussions with our contractor because the computer does that. And I've showed them, I said, I can look right now and see 2 hours from now, if the system is saying the on-time performance for that hour is going to be 100%, well, hallelujah. I can rest and go back to what I was doing. But if I could see 2 hours from now that the on-time performance is projected to be 95%, and that's 2 hours from now, that means the system has already identified some trips that are likely to be late, 5% of the trips of that particular hour. The computer does that already. And I have challenged our contractor in the call center, why can't you do something to find a alternative for those trips? We've had some conversations. They're working on it. They're trying to do better. I'm not making excuses for them because I certainly don't accept their excuses. But to answer your question, the system does that.
But can they call the customer? The customer's got tickets to go see somebody, and they're not going to... I mean, when it gets near that hour, can the OCC or somebody contact that customer? We're having a problem or something, so they can try to make some options.
Well, I think what we're trying to do at this point, before you call the customer, I think my goal would have the OCC find a solution. That, I think that's okay. What we're trying to do. And just so you know, though, that in some cases, and I think Paul can attest to this, but I don't want to put any words in his mouth, but anybody who's on there can attest. There are times when Metro Access does call a customer and offers them a trip on a taxi or an Uber because they saw that their trip is running late. I do believe that is occurring. Maybe not occurring enough, but.
Yeah, it needs to occur. It should occur at least when it's an hour. We're not saying 2 hours or they got time to fix it. Let them know something for all calls, for all trips, that there's too much craziness going on out here now. And to be left waiting or standing, not knowing about their trip is not good. That's all.
I agree.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're back on schedule. We'll let Tino do the bus rail report, and then Paul, the Metro Access report. And then if there's time, we'll come back to Steve and to Doris for their public comment. So Tino, you're up.
Yes. There are some very, very minor additions or changes that I'm going to ask be made. Nothing of substance, but we dealt with Metro bus fare boxes. We also dealt with, let's see, Metro bus service changes. Mr. Hamry dealt with that. We also, let's see, L'Enfant Plaza station closure was brought up, and the fact that at 655 Virginia Avenue, there will be the Transit Accessibility Center, and 307th Street Southwest will be our new headquarters. We mentioned those things. We spent a few seconds about floating bus stops, and Patrick Sheehan volunteered to work up a draft, a statement that we can review at the BRS meeting next week. As I said, everyone will have a chance to review the draft minutes with some minor changes that I'm going to ask be made. Nothing of substance, but please review those before the BRS meeting when we will be bringing it up again for approval. That should leave now some time for Doris and Steve for their questions after Paul gives his report. Paul?
Oh, can everyone hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes.
All right. My report, I'm going to go to the very salient things, and Ms. Rush can pick. Oh, Ms. Rush wasn't there, so I'm going for the minutes. Okay, so we had a discussion at the last MetroAccess subcommittee meeting about the FACE policy update that masks are not required. It is encouraging through messaging online and on the IVR that you know, we're encouraged to wear a mask, but is not required. We had a discussion about, you know, Uber and things like that. And Mr. Blake made the encouragement that, you know, when you book a trip, to put all the details of where you're at, because that should follow up on any trip that is transferred from MetroAccess to, you know, trips like Uber or taxi cab, any details about your location, about the trip, or anything else in particular that a driver needs to know. We also talked about Ms. Cole's concern from a previous meeting about the quality of hearing the agents, and MetroAccess staff talked about, you know, they were exploring and using different types of headsets, and I've even verified some of those technical issues and how they have improved in hearing the agents on the phone in terms of, you know, clarity when making a reservation or even talking to them on where's my ride. So that has improved with those issues, and those were addressed. The other issue we talked about is the statistics update. I made a request because of some observations to, and they have added in the new the statistics for the average number of minutes, you know, for calls. In the past, it was, you know, expressed by MetroAccess staff that generally when a customer calls in, they should be able to pick up from where's my, for both reservations and where's my ride, someone should pick up within 2 minutes, with some exception with the peak periods. But even staff said at the last meeting that they're really improving on that. And I can say today, now you can see the statistics that, you know, that we should be able to have a call answered within 2 minutes above the threshold is 95% is the target. And you know, are all, you know, very close to that target, and we'll be improving upon that. The other major piece I do want to discuss that Mr. Blake discussed was the follow up on focus groups quarterly presentation that at this meeting we will get our first quarterly report out from Mr. Blake from customer satisfaction that was done. Shared rides update, major piece. So, and I'm going to read from the notes so everyone hears this very clearly. So right now we still have, you know, roughly 7-8% people sharing rides. And as the ridership increase, that will increase. But Mr. Blake stated, and I'm reading straight from the minutes, that at beginning July 1st, shared rides may increase as we move forward to a more normal service with keeping safety as a priority. Mr. Blake stated we may begin by removing the vehicle capacity constraint and allowing shared rides on sedans, although the current scheduling process may continue. A natural increase of shared rides would happen as the demand increases over time, with emphasis here. Also on the sedan, I asked the question about the number of customers on it. Mr. Blake said probably, January 1st, customers with personal care attendants and a sedan might be riding in the back, so that increases to 2 people. I asked about riding next to the driver. He said that probably may not be back until possibly when the pandemic is over, that a passenger will be allowed to ride next to a driver in a sedan. So with that, I think I've covered all the major things. Are there any questions?
Paul, thank you. Both you and Tino, thank you. And I think we have sufficient time to hear from Steve and from Doris. So Steve, go ahead.
This is a follow-up question. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm hearing voices, but nobody is telling me who it is that's speaking.
This is Doris. I was wondering, this is a follow-up question to the presentation that you're going to make on the issues presented regarding metro access and late night service and vehicles not showing up. I would be interested and hope that you could report on the impact of the taxi crisis. Particularly, we have a taxi crisis in Northern Virginia, evenings starting 7:38 p.m. All the way through to the regular peak ride period in the morning, but especially in the early evening. So there's a crisis in terms of getting rides before a wait of 45 minutes to as much as 2 hours, and it's a daily thing. So I'm wondering how that impacts if you're moving people to taxi service and or Uber service, how that service is impacted since they're contracting with WMATA for Abilities Ride and or other Metro Access rides, and what penalties you could put on them to improve that service, because there, I don't know whether that's there's a taxi crisis in Maryland as well, but it's nothing like I've ever seen in my whole lifetime. And so if there's a crisis for just the regular taxi rider, I'm pretty certain that there's, as contractors to Metro Access, there's probably problems as well. And I'd like to know what that impact is in terms of the number of rides that are having these problems that people brought up tonight.
Can I answer Doris's question? Because I have some information. So I had a trip, Doris, that was on Old Dominion on Friday, coming from Virginia. And I can see everything in the app. And even the dispatch called me from Old Dominion to say your ride will be extremely late past the window, getting picked up like 30 or 40 minutes. Now, successfully, I was able to reach Metro Access and explain that. I said I saw three drivers they assigned to take me from Centerville to home. And each of them, it kept changing the trip. And then I got two calls from that dispatcher. So I contacted Metro Access and they were able to successfully move that trip off of the Old Dominion as abilities arrived and move it to Uber, which found a vehicle much closer to get me at the end of my window. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Paul.
Right.
Clearly there is a problem and we need to plan for the problems. Steve, please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to very, very quickly talk about fixed fare, but I didn't understand the reason for the 9:30 and later fixed fare, and now I do, to try to increase ridership. And the sacrifice being additional monies, which couldn't be used elsewhere. I question whether that objective is going to be fulfilled with a late night reduction. People who need to take the metro at 9:30 or later, or people who need to use any services 9:30 or later, are going to be using them regardless of the amount or the discount. I would think if that approach, if that's the objective, perhaps during lax periods of time, Monday through Friday, let's say from 10 till noon and from 1 till 3, off rush hours, the fixed fare may be best. It would also certainly benefit Metro Access if that's the way it'll be calculated. And it will, I think it'll lead to a much greater increase in ridership than this late night fare. And that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good question. And the only person that can answer it is Mr. Wiedefeld. In consultation with Mr. Inesiki, they developed that in the general manager's budget, presented it to the board, and the board approved it. As to all of the weeds that we went through, as far as fare box recovery, ridership funding, supplying a service to late night service workers, it all went into it. And they are the only ones that can explain it to you. And so I suggest you send an email to either Mr. Wiedefeld or Mr. Inesiki, or both. And they may be able to explain the thinking that went into it.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Sure.
Okay. Yes.
Susanna, Tino has his hand up.
Yes.
Tino, go ahead.
Yes. Thanks to Anu for circulating the resumes or the applications of candidates for the AAC. I must admit, I'm disappointed that there's no Latino to replace Elver. Well, actually, Elver can't be replaced as such, but there's no Latino in the package of five, unless I'm mistaken. And second, with respect to process, I remember some years ago that when there were new candidates, there were like a special panel of three or four AAC members who interviewed them. Is that still going to be part of the process?
No, if you recall, Tina, I had a conversation earlier this year where I had mentioned that we took a laissez-faire, if you use the economic analogy to it, to the selection process and really wanted to give the community, and this was my idea, you call it my brilliant idea, and they will, to you're the community, we listen to you, so we, in my mind, you can better pick who is representative of the community. And while you did a great job, don't get me wrong, I've heard from other members of the committee that the way that process had played out did not necessarily appease or please their point of view. So in an effort to try to bring back some balance, this year, I mentioned earlier in the year that Metro Access staff was going to take more of the lead in the selection. And quite frankly, though, and Anu, correct me if I'm wrong, the selection, I mean, the vacancies were very specific jurisdictions, and it wasn't like we were selecting through a list of Supreme Court nominees. It was really, we had a few people, and the few people we had really represented the jurisdiction that were vacant, and there was not a whole lot of competition between individuals. We were really trying to fill the vacancies, or do I have that correct, Anu?
Yes, Mr. Blake, you're right. We were hoping to get a lot more applications than we did receive. We had a lot of inquiry from people saying that they would be submitting their applications. Apparently we did not receive as many. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so in this case, even though we were gonna be much more hands-on and definitive in terms of the selection process, there really wasn't a whole lot for the AAC to do in terms of selecting anyone. This was a lot easier than President Biden's Supreme Court decision. I mean, we just didn't have a whole lot of different people in every jurisdiction. So we really just took this opportunity to fill the vacancy so that we can have a full quorum at every meeting moving forward.
And if I may just add on to that, from the applicants that did submit their applications, we also had a couple of them decline after they had submitted their applications. So just wanted to share that as well.
One question I would have, if Patrick is still here, is how did the RAC do with their number of applicants for their vacancies? Because they just filled theirs. And wonder whether they're having better luck than we are. Patrick, are you still with us?
I don't see Patrick on the list any longer.
Phil, I was at the RAC meeting. Perhaps I can, give a sentence or two in response to that.
Go ahead, Steve.
Sure. I attended the RAC meeting with a comment, and then I stayed for the meeting. I was very impressed with the, it was somewhat of a training session because I think about half or maybe even more were new to the RAC. I was very impressed with the kinds of questions that were asked, which showed that first they, that the members had done somewhat their homework before they came to the session and had a pretty good understanding of the nature of, public transit and also WMATA. The questions were very perceptive and to the point. I emailed Patrick afterwards and he said that was exactly my thought too. So thank you.
Thank you. And that's one of the reasons in the past, and we've never been able to have it happen, that any applicant attend at least two of our meetings before they apply, so they know what they're getting into. Tino, your hand was up. Go ahead.
Yes, just to follow up, I'm glad Steve was there and saw what he reported. But with respect to the AAC, there probably will be people who drop out or resign in the next few years during what would be their normal term. I imagine that we could fill such vacancies in the course of those years. And I'm asking this because if that's true, while we would definitely have to consider what jurisdiction needs to be represented by the person who left, I'm still hopeful that somewhere between now and the next cycle, we can have another Latino like Elver was. We really need to have diversity on the AAC as is called for by other jurisdictions, other governmental agencies, and even other private sector groups that hope to be representative of the folks that they represent. So if there are vacancies, I hope we can fill them before the cycle is up. And second of all, I hope all of us will search around, and maybe I'll email Elver and ask him for a recommendation that we can consider during the coming years if a vacancy comes up. Thank you.
Thank you. Good point. And the other thing that we would like to have is someone that uses all of the transit, bus, rail, and metro access, so they are aware of what's going on.
Right.
Thank you. And we are within 5 minutes of ending the meeting. And as the chair's prerogative, we have finished the entire agenda. I'll ask if there Any questions?
Chair Posner. And
without objection, I will call the meeting ended.
If I may quickly, this is Anu, make my announcement for public comments. Anybody who would like to make public comments, they can email us at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. And Tino, at Monday's meeting, I'm going to ask Mr. Haas if he will also come to the Metro Access meeting the following week. Since his position as the chief operating officer, he does bus, rail, and Metro Access. Excellent. Mr. Leader did all three. And so I think it's great he's starting out with bus, rail, but I will also ask him to come to Metro Access.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. See you all next Monday. Have a safe trip home.
Take care.
We are home.
Well, I'm in the middle of a thunderstorm, so it may not be safe.
Oh. And there's always a cruise ship, Phil.
Yes, and I have.
Instead.